Welcome to the Commonwealth Matters. I'm your host, Richard Nelson. What would you do if you were told by your boss to use gender-preferred pronouns in the workplace, forcing you to violate your conscience? And if you refuse to do so, you would lose your job. Or what if you're a pro-life nurse or other healthcare professional and told to give abortion-inducing drugs to a patient? Now, these aren't theoreticals. These are real issues facing everyday Kentuckians. Thank you for joining the Commonwealth Matters. With us, we have Greg Chafwin of Alliance Defending Freedom. Greg, thanks for joining us on the program to talk about these important issues.
Thank you for having me today.
So Alliance Defending Freedom is the world's largest legal organization committed to protecting religious freedom, free speech, marriage and family, parental rights, and the sanctity of life. A lot of foundational and important issues. A lot of our issues intersect, issues of concern that CPC has with Alliance Defending Freedom. Of course, you're a national group, primarily working in the legal realm, some influence in the legislative realm. We're a statewide group working here in Kentucky, primarily in the legislative realm. But again, our areas of concern intersect primarily on these important social issues, I guess you would say. I want us to start with religious freedom. We need to come up with a definition of this. But many people have this idea that religious freedom is simply the ability to go to church on Sunday mornings, to pray, to hear a sermon from your pastor, maybe Wednesday evening Bible study. But that's the idea that many Americans have of religious freedom. Is that accurate?
Well, that's just one piece of it. And I would say that is the freedom to worship. Some people would characterize that and limit it to that. But what real religious freedom is, and you know, in America, religious freedom is one of our fundamental values, our fundamental rights. And what it means is, you know, we all recognize we have a relationship with God, and that has certain obligations, things that we ought to do and things that we ought not to do. And all of that falls under religious freedom. And of course, we have a state that makes a lot of rules about how we live our lives, but the state should never come in between you and your relationship with God. And that's really religious freedom. It's a much broader, rich scope.
Yeah, I would add to that too, and thank you, Greg, for clarifying. I would add that it's really the ability and freedom of every person to live out their religious convictions in the public square. So it's the ability to do your job according to your conscience, to run your business according to your conscience, healthcare professionals to not be forced to violate their conscience, which is a really big issue as the cultural mores change and expectations change in general society. There is a bill at the state level here, Senate Bill 60, which expands religious freedom. Kentucky does have a RFRA bill, and by the way, for the listeners, please don't tune out right now. I want to keep us talking in layman's terms. I don't want us to get too far into the weeds unless you see the need for us to do that. But I think most of the listeners are with us right now that, yeah, religious freedom is important. And yeah, the state shouldn't encroach on religious freedom. And yeah, nurses and doctors shouldn't be compelled to perform abortions if it violates their conscience. I think we're all on the same page there. And what caused me to pause right here this moment was because I was about to use this big term about a big issue in the legislature, which probably half the audience may want to tune out, but the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Kentucky passed a bill several years ago that essentially expands religious freedom, protects religious freedom, but it's not as powerful or as strong as what other states have. Now, there's a bill right now, Senate Bill 60, that does expand that. And one of the things it does is that it, again, another big term, it removes sovereign immunity for protections from the state. If somebody were to infringe on religious freedom, and so here's an example. Governor Andy Beshear, during the COVID shutdown, said that churches must remain closed. He allowed some business to remain open, but he said churches are a non-essential business and they have to remain closed. Now, that was a violation of religious freedom. It was inconsistent with the state constitution and federal constitution. And it was arbitrary. Some businesses were allowed to stay open and churches were forced to close. Senate Bill 60 would have allowed for citizens to sue the governor That's the removal of sovereign immunity, if I understand it correctly. Can you speak on that for just a moment?
Yeah, certainly. So, you know, religious freedom, this really answers the question of what do you mean you have religious freedom? Religious freedom means, like we were saying before, the scope. Is it worship or is it actually to live your religion in your daily life? And then to what extent does it protect you? So, yes, we have a constitution to the United States that gives us all Americans fundamental rights. But 30 years ago, there was a Supreme Court decision that really lowered what religious freedom means. So you had the federal government, and then now we're up to 28 states that have passed their own state-level religious freedom laws that just restore that normal level, that fundamental rights level for religious freedom. And Kentucky has the shortest of them. And so the fact you have one is good, but the fact that it's short means you don't have the definitions. You might have, you know, uncertainty about how much of your religious practices are protected. And yes, you know, you need to be able to actually do something about it. If the state tells you to stop exercising your religion, what do you do about it? And so what this bill would do, it would actually allow people to have a remedy, be made whole. If somebody, say, were to close down your school or your church just because it's religious while they're letting all of the other groups do whatever they would normally do.
Alliance Defending Freedom is representing a group called Christian Employers Alliance in federal court. They're challenging an EEOC that's a Employment and Equal Opportunity Commission at the federal level. And there's a Biden administration mandate that forces organizations like the Christian Employers Alliance to violate their beliefs concerning gender identity and abortion. Now, this was done under the Biden administration. Joe Biden is no longer president. Donald Trump is the newly elected president. Since that was a mandate under his presidency, does this mean the lawsuit goes away, or is this still continuing?
There's a lot of moving pieces right now with the new administration taking some executive orders, changing some things around, even all the litigation that's ongoing. So we have yet to see how they will unfold moving forward. But I would say now that there's a new administration that likely will be favorable to some of these civil rights that we're talking about, I say now is the moment to really move forward. You know, when you have the wind at your back, that's when you get the work done. You build a dam when it's sunny weather. You don't build a dam in the rain. So you want to protect people. Now's the time to act and actually do good things.
There are some in the conservative movement who said that religious freedom is stronger than ever. I'm not going to name names, but there are some prominent people that have said, look, at the court level, conservatives are winning religious freedom cases. Is that the case?
Well, at the court, they're winning. Why are they in the court to begin with? Because they're being attacked, right? So while there may be some very good examples of victories in the courts, it's the litigation, the process is the punishment. Having to put doctors, nurses, teachers, average people through court procedures with lawyers and just years of litigation is itself a punishment. So while there are some good things happening, there are greater attacks than I think we've seen in the past. And also, no, 30 years ago, like I said, the First Amendment used to protect religious freedom much more robustly. And so prior to that decision, if we could go back that direction, then perhaps I'd agree with that person. But no, right now, we still have to stand up for our faith. We need to live our faith freely in public. And if we ever have the state coming in between us and our religious obligations, stand for what you believe.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying that, Greg. I think probably the best case in point that illustrates what you're saying is, and probably the most famous defendant when it comes to conscience rights and religious freedom protections is Jack Phillips, the baker in Colorado, who declined baking a cake with a message that violated his conscience and deep religious convictions. Now, Jack has won at the U.S. Supreme Court level at least once, maybe a couple times, but he continues to be persecuted year after year, it seems. Different people, different rationale. I mean, he was asked to make a gender reveal cake celebrating somebody, not a gender reveal, somebody, a cake celebrating somebody's gender identity, violated his deepest convictions. And you see, again, where there's hostility that I don't think we would have seen 10, 15, 20 years ago, and people using the court system, using the laws, and using the court system to target somebody that has unpopular beliefs or conservative beliefs in particular. How often do you see cases like that? Jack Phillips is the highest profile national case. But are you seeing, is that isolated? Is that because you have a bad law in Colorado and a few zealots in Colorado that are targeting conservative Christian perspective. Are you seeing this across the country?
So unfortunately, there are other cases of this. Now, remember, Jack Phillips serves everybody. Anybody could come to a store, buy anything that they want. The problem is when they ask him to put his own creative talent to work to express a message. And similar situation happened. There was a Supreme Court case, 303 Creative, of a website designer who celebrates wedding ceremonies by creating websites. Similar thing. She was targeted. There was a law that was going to stop her from being able to do this, and she just stood up for her rights. And yes, there are other examples of people going after organizations because of their, as you said, you know, just politically unpopular views at that moment that might be religiously motivated. So whether it's a religious minority, the Jewish, Muslim folks, or whether you're a majority person like a Christian that holds a view that might be unpopular in some state, those all count as your civil right to religious freedom.
I want to bring it to Kentucky. There was a case several years ago of a photographer in the city of Louisville, Chelsea Nelson, who under their local fairness ordinance was compelled to do a photo shoot of a lesbian wedding. She said, I can't do that. An ADF was involved. They challenged that ordinance, and it was successful in federal court. ADF won on behalf of Chelsea Nelson. The ordinance was... at least part of it was put on hold, if that's the correct word. They said that the city cannot violate her conscience rights when it comes to using her creative talents. That was the term he used in her photography. So we're seeing victories. One thing I observed, Greg, though, is that first of all, no, human nature is such where we don't like conflict. We don't want to be singled out or targeted. And there's a lot of fear out there. People that don't want to challenge existing laws. People that don't want to be put through the ringer of a court battle. Do you see the same thing? Where there's just it's hard to find somebody that will that you can represent and willing to go through the legal process and willing to fight it out. Do you find that it's difficult to find people that? And I'm not blaming the people. I don't want you to hear that. But people that will just stand and say, hey, my rights have been violated. I want to press this in court, and we need to push back against these unjust laws.
You know, I'd say courage begets courage. When you have one person standing up, making a stand, other people start coming out. And, you know, I'm hopeful that people will realize that groups like Alliance Defending Freedom, there are a number of other great law firms out there that will provide free services to folks that who are trying to live consistent with their faith. And find a conflict. So when you see somebody being able to have a victory in court because of their religious practices, that's very encouraging. But also very troubling is the fact that if you don't have protections in state law, people might think that they're not protected. And so there could be many, many, many cases of people out there who are discriminated against because of their religion who don't think they have any recourse. And you know what? Sometimes they don't, which is why you need to have the good state laws and good state policy that teaches people they can stand and live consistent with their faith and then have a legal remedy if the state violates their rights.
Greg, what about being canceled in the workplace? I think of a real big legislative battle a couple years ago, Senate Bill 150, which banned transition surgeries of minors. It banned gender ideology to be taught in the public school classrooms. It restricted bathroom use to the born biological sex. A number of good things, but I remember when we were involved with the committee hearings, there were people in the city of Frankfort that could have provided testimony, but they were scared to death. They thought that they could be fired. We had people at Regional Hospital that saw firsthand how minors were being pushed into gender transitions. They didn't want to step forward. They didn't want to testify. They feared that their job might be on the line. Can you speak? I know you're a national organization, and you might not know all of Kentucky law, but can somebody be fired for simply providing legislative testimony on an issue like that? Is that allowed?
Well, it's understandable that people are concerned. If the state, so the free speech rights applies to state actors. So if you're working for the government or a public institution or public hospital, they should not be able to fire you for your free speech expressions. Mm-hmm. But many other employers, you know, political views is not a protected class. And so you might have reason to be concerned about what your employer might do to you if you express these views publicly. It's very unfortunate that some of these views are politically unfavorable in that way. But what we focus on is the civil rights protected from state encroachments. Now, there are different issues with doctors and people in the medical industry who might express concern about medical procedures, and there might be some things that states are focusing on with that. But yes, there is a lot of concern for chilling people's ability to express their views, just more from a civil discourse and civil society standpoint.
We are going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. Hi, my name is Richard Nelson, founder and executive director of the Commonwealth Policy Center. We're here to shore up the sanctity of human life, religious freedom, natural marriage, and sound fiscal policies. At the Commonwealth Matters, we have conversations with leading thinkers and policymakers to help us think biblically about the great issues of the day. If you appreciate our work, then please consider a donation today. This work is entirely supported by people just like you. Your gifts and tax-deductible contributions help to underwrite this program, and you help to get this important message out all across the Commonwealth. We believe that the Commonwealth of Kentucky is a great place to live, and we want to keep it that way for our families and our children. That's why we're standing for what's right, for what's good, and what's true right here in Kentucky. Thanks in advance for your support, and may God bless you. Let's talk about conscience rights for healthcare professionals. One of the most notable cases that ADF was involved with, and the case that I'm aware of, involved a pediatric nurse in Illinois, Sandra Rojas, who was told that she'd have to provide abortion referrals and provide abortion-inducing drugs to women. She refused. She said, "I can't do that. It violates my conscience. I am pro-life." She ended up resigning because she could not work in good conscience for an organization that would compel her to promote abortion or to provide for abortion. There was a lawsuit to restore her religious freedom rights, her conscience rights, and she won. In February of 2022, the court ruled that Winnebago County, the employer, must pay more than $370,000 to Sandra's attorneys. That was a big victory, wasn't it?
Yes, and so that was a victory because Illinois has conscience protections for healthcare professionals. This is something that we're seeing a lot of states put interest in again. Illinois had this law since 1977. The only similar one was in Mississippi in 2006. But in the last 3 years, five other states have passed conscience protections for healthcare providers. For people like Sandra. Sandra had worked for 20 years, excellent awards, taking care of children. And when her group was merged with a women's health center, yes, like you said, she was forced to refer people to end the life of unborn children, something she could never do.
Kentucky, unfortunately, does not have a specific provision to protect the conscience rights of healthcare professionals. A bill was introduced last session. We expect a bill to be introduced this session. What would you tell, if you were testifying in front of a legislative committee, what would you tell them? Why should they pass a bill that would protect conscience rights of healthcare professionals?
Because it's good for doctors, it's good for patients, and it's good for medicine. You know, doctors have ethical concerns. They take an oath to do no harm, and that always involves their conscience rights. So you need to protect their conscience rights so they can practice medicine. It's good for patients because patients want a doctor with ethical integrity. They want to be able to talk with their doctors and understand that they're doing something because they think it's in their best interest. And it's good for medicine because medicine is developed by people looking at different options, considering what's the best option. And if you can't question scientific results, if people will be, like we were saying before, just fired because they might question, say, in the gender ideology space, then you won't even have good medicine. So it's really good for everybody involved.
That's good. Let's move on to another important topic. Back in September, just a few months ago, Governor Andy Beshear signed an executive order that prohibited counselors from helping gender dysphoric youth or youth that identified as LGBTQ. It banned them from counseling them towards their biological gender, even if the minor wanted to embrace their biological born gender. There is pushback on this. CPC, by the way, was involved with a press conference. We had legislators there. We had some pastors, some biblical counselors there. There is pushback against that this legislative session. Listen to what Andy Beshear said, then I'd like you to comment. He said that conversion therapy, and that's the term that he's using, conversion therapy has no basis in medicine or science, and it can cause significant long-term harm to our kids, including increased rates of suicide and depression. This is about protecting our youth from an inhumane practice that hurts them. Greg, one other note is that the executive order made it illegal to use state or federal funds to provide conversion therapy on minors, and it gives Kentucky licensing boards the authority to take disciplinary action against licensees found to have practiced conversion therapy on minors. Let's first of all talk about conversion therapy, that term.
Yeah, so unfortunately, you know, in that first statement you said, it's exactly the opposite of what he said. Too often, you know, people on the other side just say things the opposite of what they think they're saying. Bad ideas have consequences. Ideas have consequences, but bad ideas have victims. And this is especially true in this case. You know, children that are struggling with gender dysphoria, if they're allowed to grow up through adolescence naturally, the vast majority of them desist. It means they come to terms with their body. And laws like this, rules like this that, you know, just an executive might just put out there and say, no, there's a one-way street. You can only have children go towards gender transition if they're having gender dysphoria. Just takes away opportunities from parents and children, sets them on a lifelong trajectory for harm. And that's what's causing all of these issues. So it takes away the ability of counselors to have open and frank conversations with kids that just, like you're saying, want to be comfortable in their bodies. There's so much more that can be said about this, but I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah. So I think important context here is that conversion therapy had the connotation of something that was abusive, harmful, a counseling technique that involved shame, electrotherapy, things like that. However, it's interesting, if you read his executive order, it goes beyond that. Because by the way,
it doesn't even mention that. It says all it says is change, anything that would change a gender identity.
Absolutely. So by the way, there's bad actors in the counseling field, and there are bad practices that have been discredited. Counselors today aren't practicing that, but they've pivoted over to this idea that anything that would lead to change, discussing the issue, helping the patient to align with their, again, born gender biology. So it's just the offer to help change is what we're talking about. The term, by the way, that's being used is sexual orientation change efforts, SOCE, which the governor said in his executive order that it is okay to counsel and to affirm a child's gender identity, but you cannot counsel or help them to embrace their God-given biological gender. So let's just focus on that. Is that legal to have a governmental order that allows speech in one direction but would prohibit speech in another direction?
Well, so, and when you talk about things states can't do, they can't prefer one viewpoint and prohibit another viewpoint. And it does seem like that's what they're doing here. And also it says it's not considered a conversion therapy to transition, which again, you know, like you were saying, conversion doesn't mean transition a child. It starts to just boggle the mind. But so they're allowed to transition a child, try to make them look like the other sex, but you can't detransition. So it is a one-way street, and really it's doing a lot of harms.
So you brought up the term detransition, and this is something that we're seeing a lot of people who have transitioned to the opposite gender, at least, and the best way to put it is, the truth is that you truly cannot become the opposite biological gender. You can be made to look externally like the opposite biological gender, but what we're seeing is a phenomenon where there are many people who have transitioned and they're unhappy and they want to go back to their born gender. And what this executive order is saying is that no, even if kids are unhappy and they want to go back, you can't do that under state law. There is a bill, House Bill 64, that would nullify Governor Beshear's ban on counseling minors who are gender dysphoric. How many laws, do you know offhand, how many other states have laws that deal with so-called conversion therapy, first of all, and then secondly, how many states have laws that have pushed back against that, that affirm the rights of counselors to counsel their minor patients?
So there are too many that are banning talk therapy, so that are interfering with free speech rights, far too many. And there is a litigation going on, and there's a circuit split, meaning there are disagreements between large groups of states, the courts. And we're actually, Alliance Defending Freedom has a case right now before the Supreme Court asking them to resolve this issue and to clarify that this is free speech, talk therapy should be allowed. We have yet to hear if they'll take that case. But we are fighting this. And as far as states pushing back, actually protecting talk therapy, there's Idaho last year passed a bill protecting counselor rights. And we're hopeful that with this medical conscience rights bill that protects free speech in the therapy session context would also help in this space.
So if you were speaking in front of a state legislative committee on House Bill 64, what would be some of the main points that you'd want to tell legislators? This is the bill that would undo Governor Beshear's ban on talk therapy or sexual orientation change efforts.
So the extent to which a particular legislation could affect an executive order, I haven't done a deep dive into that. But of course, the legislature controls the power of the purse. They have the money. And the executive order did have to do with public agency spending money. So a legislature should be able to tell, you know, the executive, don't discriminate with the monies that we're granting for all of these different programs. It's a matter of discrimination against people because of their exercise of free speech or for, like we're saying, helping kids be comfortable in their biological bodies or talking through and explaining and being getting rid of undesired sexual interests of whatever sort. This is talk therapy with, you know, patients, clients, whether it's parents for their kids or kids themselves or, you know, people themselves looking for counseling, resolving issues with themselves, with their therapist. You don't need the government. You don't need a state official getting in between a therapist and the client.
So it would seem to me, Greg, a few things that come to mind is that this is good for counselors, right? It maintains their freedom to counsel according to their principles. Look, there are biblical counselors in Kentucky who are no longer allowed to do this according to the executive order. It's good for parents that want to help their confused child align with their born gender as they were born. And it's good for those, it's good for the minors, it's good for counselors, good for parents, and it's good for the minors who want to embrace their God-given biology. So it seems to benefit all of these groups. We'll see where this bill goes. We do know that there's strong pushback against what the governor's done. We'll see if the state legislature has enough courage, if you will. Enough motivation, if they're willing to spend political capital. Courage isn't the right word. We've got a lot of good legislators, and they're doing a lot of good things. I think it may be a matter of time. It's a short session, and they're limited as to the issues they can deal with and what they can do. My hope is that they move with this one. This is an important issue. There is a bill that is in the works. I don't know if it has a number on it yet, but we do expect a bill to ban debanking in Kentucky. Greg, we are out of time. This has been a great program. We're looking forward to briefing legislators on these issues here in the CPC office in just a little bit. But thank you for joining us. God bless you, and you keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, Richard.